ஓம் நம சிவாய. டியர் லிசனர்ஸ் ஆஃப் சைவம் .org, தி நெக்ஸ்ட் ப்ரோக்ராம் இஸ் ஸ்பிரிச்சுவல் டிஸ்கோர்ஸ். இன் திஸ் யூ ஆர் அபவுட் டு லிசன் கவாய் ஹிந்து லெக்சர்ஸ். த டைட்டில்ஸ் ஆர் பிகமிங் மோர் ஸ்பிரிச்சுவல் அண்ட் நியமா பேஷன்ஸ், பிரசன்டட் பை ஸ்ரீ சிவாய போதிநாத வேலாயுத சுவாமி. தேங்க் யூ. ஓம் நம சிவாய.
ஓகே, டைம்ஸ் அப். சிம்பிள் எக்ஸாம்பிள் ஐ கிவ் இன் மை கிவ் த ஃபுல் டாக் ஆன் மிஸ்டேக்ஸ் இஸ் வி ஹேவ் எ பேக் டிரைவ்வே தட் ஹேஸ் சம் ஹோல்ஸ் இன் இட், ரட்ஸ். ஸோ இட்ஸ் ஈஸி டு டிரைவ் அலாங் அண்ட் bounce, you know, hit the hole driving along, and there's just a couple of holes which are easy to hit. So if we're committed to this principle of not making the same mistake twice, when we hit that hole the first time, we say, okay, how can I not hit it in the future? It's just a natural response. You know, we've cultivated that quality in us to admit immediately, okay, I made a mistake. How can I avoid making it again? So, because we don't have any emotion that goes along with the idea we made a mistake. You know, if we still have that emotional reaction, we feel bad, then we can't be self-reflective and feel bad at the same time. You know, if we feel bad, I shouldn't have done that. We lose the chance to be immediately self-reflective. But if we've replaced that with being self-reflective and committed to avoiding it in the future, then it's a natural reaction. We hit the hole in the road and we say, there's a hole in the road. Okay? From now on into the future, I'm going to drive on the other side of the road when I get to this point, and therefore not make the same mistake twice. So that's a commitment to improving our behavior. That's a wonderful commitment, and it's taking advantage of this principle of learning from our mistakes by totally changing the attitude that we shouldn't make mistakes. You know, part of what I tell people when they write in and they say, I made this mistake, I've got this weakness, I say, well, if any of us were perfect, we wouldn't have been born in the first place. You know, the fact that we're born shows we're not perfect, we'll make mistakes. So we need to anticipate making mistakes, and then when we do, you know, go through the four steps, apologize if necessary, do penance if necessary, but for certain, learn from it so we can at least try to avoid doing it again and hopefully successfully avoid that. Okay, so so as our last example, we're using the yamas and niyamas, Hinduism's code of conduct, these 20 principles, as a reference point for improving our behavior, becoming a more spiritual person. And so yesterday we were looking at the yama of non-injury and harnessing the tendency to injure people. So the niyamas are the opposite. The yamas we want to do less of. You know, we're trying to master them, whereas the niyamas we want to do more of. These are religious practices that we want to do more of in our life. So today we're looking at the yama of dana, or giving. So dana is to be generous to a fault, giving liberally without thought of reward. Approach the temple with offerings. Visit Guru with gifts in hand. Donate religious literature. Feed and give to those in need. Bestow your time and talents without seeking praise. Treat guests as God. That's Gurudeva's explanation of dana. So here's some examples. First example. Near where a family lives, there is a Hindu temple where they worship regularly. Every time the family visits the temple, they are always sure to put a generous offering into the temple hundi. The family also regularly visits the Swami at his ashram that is nearby. Each visit, they are sure to bring a cash offering, dakshina, as well as an offering of flowers and fruits. Second example, an orphanage sends its staff to visit certain families once a year to ask for a donation to help feed and clothe the orphans who live there. As the request is only yearly, the husband makes an especially large donation once a year. Third example, a wife is very conscious of the principle that the guest is God, and when guests are in her home, always invites them to stay and join the family for the next meal. Fourth example, a Hindu society prints religious literature which it distributes free at all the major festivals. Each piece of literature is sponsored by a different family and has their name on the back. Certain members of the society regularly sponsor these pamphlets each year as a way of spreading knowledge about the Hindu religion. All of the niyam is focused on expressing the refined soul qualities within each of us. In the case of dana, giving, the divine quality we are expressing is giving to help others without any thought of reward, such as recognition or future favors. So sometimes people give for one or both of those reasons. They're giving as long as their name will go up on a plaque on the building. You know, I built this building, recognition. Or they're giving as a barter. Well, they're doing something nice and they're expecting something back in the favor there. They give to the temple and then the temple buys from their business or something. So those kinds of, that kind of giving isn't really the spirit of selfless giving. So dana, or true selfless giving, effectively lessens the instinctive tendencies of selfishness, greed, avarice, and hoarding. So that's important. We're born selfish. And we have to work at becoming less selfish. And the less selfish we are, the more spiritual we are. But there's an innate selfishness in being a human being. And we need to overcome that. And one of the ways of overcoming it is giving things away. Because there's a tendency, everything we get, we cling to it. It's mine. I may need it. But giving things away helps overcome that instinctive self-centeredness. Selfishness, greed, avarice, and hoarding. So here's a story to further illustrate dana. A devotee worshipped regularly at a temple. There were always a number of beggars outside the temple, and the man would pass by them purposefully ignoring them. One day he felt compelled to give some money to them. He noticed that afterwards he felt uplifted by this simple act. From then on, he would always be sure to give to the beggars before entering the temple, and each time he felt the same upliftment. This joy he felt in helping the beggars inspired him to start a monthly mass feeding at the temple, which the beggars and others who live near the temple now attend each month. So here's a list of different forms of giving. Sometimes we think of giving as only related to money. And therefore, we can only afford to give so much money, so we only give so much as we can afford to. But there's many other forms of giving that don't require any money or require very little money. In the modern world, the most common form of giving is a gift of money. We make cash gifts whenever we visit temples and ashrams. We can also make something with our hands, which is an in-kind gift. For example, we have a carpentry shop at home, and on weekends make furniture that we donate to orphanages and homes for the elderly. So that's in-kind giving, where we make something. Third form of giving is giving our time. That's free. We help out at the local temple by cleaning the floors and other areas once a week. Another form of giving is imparting spiritual teachings. We purchase religious literature and give it away during major festivals, Yana Dana. A fifth form of giving is religious feedings of the masses called Anna Yajna or simply Yagam. We sponsor a monthly Yagam at a large temple in our city, covering all the costs. Another form of giving is providing hospitality to guests. We offer them a seat and serve them a beverage and insist they stay for the next meal. So this is our last self-reflection here. We want to take 5 minutes and list some ways in which we can increase our giving. As I say, it doesn't have to involve money. Giving time, for example, is one way we can all give more. And the more we're able to give to others, the less selfish we are. And Gurudeva has a wonderful statement about happiness. He ties that in quite nicely. He says, if you want to be happy, make others happy. You know, it's that simple. The more selfish we are, the more prone to unhappiness we are. But a simple way to experience happiness is just to make others happy. So, let's take 5 minutes and see if you can figure out some ways, practical ways in which you can practice giving. Increase your practice of giving without emptying your pocketbook. Okay, time's up. So, it's time to conclude. Got 5 more minutes left here. So, the overview of our initial talk and our two classes is that the guru's job, Gurudeva likes the word job, the guru's job, as he would say, is to encourage you to try harder and make some suggestions as to how you can do that. That's his job, is to never let you just sit there and be content with what you've achieved, but continually strive to achieve more, become a more spiritual person. And the yamas and niyamas are very useful points for looking at our behavior, as we suggested, once a year to look at them closely when they come around in the Living with Shiva lessons, starting in the last part of April through toward the last part of June. Every year we have a natural opportunity when we get our daily lessons on the yamas and niyamas to look at it and see, you know, gee, how can I improve? In what small way can I do even better than I am now? So just those 20 principles offer a lot of guidance in becoming a more spiritual person. And then we also look briefly at fulfilling vratas as a wonderful way for doing that. And then the very important principle of learning from our mistakes, what to do when we make a mistake and how to use it as something to improve our behavior rather than to make us feel bad about ourselves. So we'll be continuing this subject. Any of you who are going on our India Inner Search will offer lots more. We're just scratching the surface here in a couple of hours and work out a more detailed and comprehensive presentation which touches all the major areas for the Inner Search. And it's a very easy Inner Search for India. India can be a very difficult country to go to if we go on a traditional pilgrimage. A lot of hardships involved, but this is not that. It's not a cruise ship, but somewhere in the middle between a cruise ship and a hardship pilgrimage. Going to the nicest hotel in Madurai and staying there for about a week. Then the second nicest hotel in Tanjavur. So that we can avoid as much traveling as possible. It's very tiring in India when you're constantly changing hotels every day or two. A lot of energy goes into that. So we're trying to stay in one place for 7 days, I think, in the first instance, and about 5 days in the second instance, and visit all the temples around, plus have a balanced program of classes in the morning, temple visits either in the morning or the afternoon, and then a cultural program in the evening. We're going to present a variety of cultural experiences, different forms of dancing and singing, and Vedic chanting are some of the items that are on the program. So that's something to look forward to. And we have next Guru Purnima also for here. So thank you all for coming and coming to the class and working on yourself. You feel you're a better person. Good morning, everyone. We're continuing our normal series of talks on the yamas and niyamas. Hinduism's code of conduct, the 20 principles which govern spiritual life so nicely. The yamas, of course, are the restraints, harnessing the instinctive mind, and the niyamas are the observances where we're expressing our soul qualities. So today we're up to niyama number 7, and as we mentioned last Sun 1, the last 5 niyamas, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10, as expounded by Gurudeva, all relate in some way to the Guru. So we'll see that as one of the themes this morning, how cognition relates to the Guru. Today's lesson on good conduct is on the 7th niyama of Mati, which is to develop a spiritual will and intellect with your Sadhguru's guidance. Strive for knowledge of God to awaken the light within. Discover the hidden lesson in each experience to develop a profound understanding of life and yourself. Through meditation, cultivate intuition by listening to the still small voice within, by understanding the subtle sciences, inner worlds, and mystical texts. Let's look at some examples illustrating the practice of this niyama. First example. In studying about karma and karmic cycles, a young woman intuitively saw how the same karmic cycle involving an accident had repeated itself 3 times in her life so far. Second example. A man who had developed a strong intellectual pride from his university training began studying with the Swami. After studying for about 5 years, the young man's nature had changed into a more humble one that recognized the limitations of his intellectual knowledge when compared to intuitive knowledge. Third example, a young woman decided to attend the 5 a.m. Ganesha Puja at a nearby temple for each of the 21 days of Vinayaka Vratam, and successfully did so without missing one day. Fourth example, after attending a particularly powerful Ganesha Puja, a young man had an intuitive insight that the best career for him to pursue to fulfill his Swadharma in the highest way is that of a teacher. All of the niyamas focus on expressing the refined soul qualities within each of us. In the case of Mati, the divine quality we are expressing is becoming a more spiritual person through developing a spiritual intellect, utilizing our willpower to achieve inner spiritual goals, and tapping into our intuition to provide answers from our superconscious mind. The Thirukkural in his chapter 36, Knowledge of Truth, in verse 352, stresses the importance of intuition when it talks about the power of undimmed perception. Also, it beautifully echoes the thought in our description of Mati to strive for knowledge of God to awaken the light within. The Kral verse reads, "For those of undimmed perception, free from delusion, darkness departs, and rapture rushes in." The first aspect of practicing Mati is developing a spiritual intellect. The intellect is a thinking portion of our mind. It goes through a developmental process over a period of many lives. At first, the thinking mind is dominated by our instinctive nature. We are caught up in the lower emotions of fear, anger, jealousy, and revenge. Also, the negative karmas caused by our adharmic deeds keep the intellect in a constant state of disturbance. Over time, we gain greater and greater control over these emotions as well as discipline ourselves to follow a dharmic life by observing the yamas. At that point, our mind is calm from the positive karmas caused by our dharmic deeds, and the lower emotions no longer dominate our intellect. They are replaced by the faculties of memory and reason. Memory and reason are useful but limited, as they cannot provide the answers to the deeper questions in life. In fact, if they are overstimulated, they can keep the thinking mind quite active and somewhat frustrated. Unfortunately, modern secular education teaches us to rely totally on memory and reason and encourages us to think that our intellectual abilities are who we are. Therefore, especially important to developing a spiritualized intellect is the niyama of Siddhanta Shravana, study of the teachings and listening to the wise, as it fills the intellect with right religious knowledge, which eventually brings humility as well. We spiritualize our intellect further by looking for knowledge in the superconscious realms beyond the realms of memory and reason. We can draw a comparison to worship. Our attitude in worship is to seek the blessings of God and gods who are far more developed spiritually and far wiser than we. Our attitude in seeking knowledge from our intuition should be the same, that our faculty of intuition is far wiser than our faculties of memory and reason, and that we seek knowledge from our superconscious intuition that cannot be attained through memory or reason. However, such knowledge can be used by memory and reason once it is received. A second aspect of practicing Mati is developing a spiritual will. Willpower is the strength of will to carry out one's decisions, wishes, or plans. People who regularly make plans and fail to carry them out lack willpower. For example, a student often plans to get up early to study for his tests, but always, when the time comes, decides to continue sleeping instead. Willpower is channeling the rarefied energies of the body, of awareness itself, into attention and concentration upon everything that we do through the day. How can this be cultivated? Gurudeva gives us the key in merging with Shiva. He says that willpower can be cultivated by finishing and doing well every task that we undertake. Finishing and doing well every task that we undertake. In fact, done a little better than our expectations. First, finish each task. Second, do it well. Nothing is done with half our mind thinking about something else. Nothing is dropped in the middle. Developing these two important habits produces an indomitable willpower. Gurudeva has an insightful comment on willpower. The more you use your personal individual willpower, the more willpower you have. Once we have an indomitable willpower, how then can we spiritualize it? We spiritualize it by living a spiritual life. This means controlling our instinctive impulses through following well the yamas. It means striving to perfect the niyamas, especially contentment, austerity, giving faith, and regular worship. It means holding the humble attitude that our intellectual knowledge produced through memory and reason is quite limited and pales before the knowledge that comes from our superconscious. And it means engaging in regular worship and meditation in which we strive to personally experience the divine realms of the gods and of our soul. Third aspect of Mati is to cultivate intuition. So far, we have acquired a body of spiritual knowledge through reading and listening that is based on the experiences, insights, and observations of others. The idea now is to add to this knowledge through our own insights, observations, and experiences, and thereby further deepen our understanding. Intuition is direct understanding or cognition which comes from our superconscious mind, which bypasses the process of reason. Intuition is a far superior source of knowing than reason, but it does not contradict reason. Here's a story to illustrate intuition. A husband and wife normally don't argue. However, an exception is that they do regularly argue about money at the time the husband gets his monthly paycheck. The husband never gave the matter much thought until on one such occasion he has an insight that his parents did the same thing. He then concludes that he has picked up this habit from them and decides to break the habit, which, with the support of his intuitive insight, he is successful at. If prior to the insight we had asked this man why he argued regularly at the time he was paid, he would not have been able to answer the question through his faculties of memory and reason. It took the new knowledge added by his intuitive insight to provide the answer. Part of the challenge in cultivating intuition is to distinguish a thought that comes from intuition from one that comes from memory and reason. A simple way of doing so is to know that insights are a flash of understanding that contain a complete concept and are short in duration. Thoughts from memory and reason are partial concepts and last a longer time. Also effective in catalyzing the process of having intuitive insights is the worship of Lord Ganesha. His darshan helps us move into the intuitive area of the mind. For the full development of mati, Gurudeva states that it requires the grace of the Satguru, as it is a transference of divine energies from the Satguru to the Shishya, building a purified intellect honed down by the Guru for the Shishya, and a spiritual will developed by the Shishya by following the religious sadhanas the Guru has laid down until the desired results are attained to the Guru's satisfaction. In conclusion, develop a spiritual will and intellect with your Satguru's guidance. Strive for knowledge of God to awaken the light within. Discover the hidden lesson in each experience to develop a profound understanding of life and yourself. Through meditation, cultivate intuition by listening to the still small voice within, by understanding the subtle sciences, inner worlds, and mystical texts. Om Namah Shivaya. Good morning, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to our guests. Pleasure to have you with us. This morning we're continuing our series on niyamas and niyamas, Hinduism's code of conduct, 20 basic principles, and we're developing this material for use in the field for teachers to use, and so it's in the form of a lesson that takes about 10 minutes to read. And trying to develop what Gurudeva has presented in Living with Shiva. He's given us wonderful material on each of these yamas and niyamas. And so this is trying to develop that and give examples and illustrations and bring in sometimes some points from his other books that aren't included. So today we're up to the eighth niyama of vrata, which is to embrace religious vows, rules and observances, and never waver in fulfilling them. Honor vows as spiritual contracts with your soul, your community, with God, gods, and guru. Take vows to harness the instinctive nature. Fast periodically, pilgrimage yearly. Uphold your vows strictly, be they marriage, monasticism, non-addiction, tithing, loyalty to a lineage, vegetarianism, or non-smoking. All of the niyamas focus on expressing the refined soul qualities within each of us. In the case of vrata, the divine quality we are expressing is becoming a more spiritual person through vowing to the inner worlds, as well as to family and community, to observe certain practices for a specific period of time or for our entire lifetime. Gurudeva describes a vrata as a sacred trust. He says that people make little promises and break them, but that this is not a vrata. A vow is also never only to oneself. A vow is always to God, gods, and guru, community, and respected elders. It is a sacred trust with God, gods, and guru made at a most auspicious time in one's life. Vrata is a binding force, binding the external mind to the soul and the soul to the divine. Gurudeva goes on to say that a vrata is a sacred trust between you and your guardian devas, the devas that surround the temple you most frequent, and the Mahadevas who live within the third world, which you live into in your deep inmost mind, in the radiant self-luminous body of your soul. Let's look first at a very common type of vrata, which is a vow motivated by the desire to achieve a certain outcome in the world. Student has an important test that she has to pass. A businessman faces a deal that he needs to be successful in order to accomplish his expansion plan. A son prays that his mother will recover from her cancer treatments and live many more years. In all these situations, we vow to God or a god such as Lord Ganesha that if the outcome we seek happens, then we will do something such as attend the temple every week, give a sum of money to the temple, or never perform a certain act again. Another common type of vow is making a promise to observe certain religious practices in a strict manner. Often these vratas relate to a specific day of the month or a deity festival. An individual takes a vow to fast on the 13th day of each lunar fortnight, known as Pradosha Vrata, for 1 year. We take a vrata for the 6 days of Skanda Shashti, and then during the day fast and attend puja at the temple and eat only in the evening. The 21-day festival to Lord Ganesha, Vinayaka Vratam, incorporates vrata in the name of the festival itself, and is often observed in the same way as Skanda Shashti, fasting during the day and attending Ganesha Puja, and then eating only at night. For Taipusa, many devotees fast and follow other disciplines for days in advance, and then on the Taipusam day, carry kavadi. Certain pilgrimages also have vratas associated with them. An example is the Sabarimala pilgrimage to Lord Ayyappan. In this case, a vrata is taken covering the restrictions that are followed both during the 41 days prior to the pilgrimage, as well as during the pilgrimage itself, which includes dietary restrictions and the practice of brahmacharya. It is interesting to note that Gurudeva often spoke of pilgrimages. It is interesting to note that Gurudeva often spoke of pilgrims coming to worship God Shiva at our Sanmarga sanctuary as following a similar strictness to Sabarimala, where they would prepare themselves ahead of time by fasting and other sadhanas. In the four examples given, the vrata is for a fixed period of time and then is over. The Pradosha Vrata example was for 1 year. Skanda Shashti lasts only 6 days, Vinayaka Vratam 21 days, and Sabarimala until the pilgrimage is completed. The vows mentioned so far are all taken privately by oneself, usually at a temple or in the home shrine room. Another type of vow is taken before family and community. This is for vows that are longer lasting or lasting for a lifetime, where community support is needed to help us live up to our commitments. Examples of a vow with community support is the Brahmacharya Vrata, pledging to maintain virginity until marriage. The Vivaha Vrata, marriage vows, are also taken before community. Taking a vow before family and community is a sacred trust between yourself, your outer self, your inner self, your loved ones, and closest friends. It would be difficult to look them straight in the eye if you yourself know that you have let yourself down, and this helps you hold to the vow during difficult times. Gurudeva describes this as vratas give the strength to withstand the temptations of the instinctive forces that naturally come up as one goes on through life, not to suppress them, but to rechannel them into a lifestyle fully in accord with the yamas and niyamas. A vow that Gurudeva describes as the most obvious and important vow is the yama and niyama vow. It can be taken most readily and renewed once a year on a day which you consider your most sacred day, such as Maha Shivaratri, Ganesha Chaturthi, Skanda Shashti, or Deepavali. The idea is to vow to uphold the yamas and niyamas for the coming year to the best of your ability, at least 50%. Then each subsequent year you can increase the percentage until finally it is at 100%. It is important to mention that many people feel that if they don't fulfill their vrata, they have failed. Gurudeva comments on this by saying, the only failure is that experienced by the one who quits and gives up without trying again. The wiser response to failure is to immediately renew the vrata and try again. There are more advanced vows, such as those taken with a guru for a lifetime. Gurudeva established three such vows for his shishya to fulfill: the shakahara or vegetarian vrata, which governs diet; the parampara or lineage vrata, which governs spiritual studies; and the dasamabhaga or tithing vrata, which governs finance. The vegetarian vow builds character through the control of appetite, which is control of the instinctive mind. In other words, as our control of appetite increases, the control over the other instinctive emotions, such as anger and jealousy, also improves. It all moves along together. Shakahara Vrata, of course, starts with avoiding the non-vegetarian foods. It also includes eating a healthy, balanced diet, thus avoiding chemically adulterated foods and minimizing junk foods and even frozen foods. The vow also includes the virtues of mittahara, moderate appetite, not eating too much, and it includes not eating between meals. The parampara, or lineage vow, builds character through control of mental and philosophical ramification, which is control of the intellect. Traditionally, giving all loyalties to a lineage precludes all extraneous training and requires closing off intellectual inroads to other lineages, not reading their books, not taking their courses. This vow harnesses the tendency to jump from teacher to teacher in search of new studies and techniques, rather than staying with one's current study and set of techniques and perfecting it. Gurudeva insightfully describes this vow when he says that it is a total focus demanded of the shishya by the shishya himself, so that learning of one unique path may mature past intellectual states into completely experiential knowing. The tithing vow builds character through control of money, which is the control of desire. Lots of desires are fulfilled by spending money to acquire possessions. As soon as we get our paycheck, we rush out to the store to buy something we just can't live without. After a few months, we stop using it altogether and find something else we just can't live without and buy that. In fulfilling the dasamabhaga vrata, whenever we receive money, the first thing to do is to give 10% of it to God. This practice spiritualizes the remaining 90% and helps us use it wisely. An additional step in fulfilling the dasamabhaga vrata is to develop a household budget and then spend the month's income according to the agreed-upon plan. In conclusion, embrace religious vows, rules, and observances, and never waver in fulfilling them. Honor vows as spiritual contracts with your soul, your community, with God, gods, and guru. Take vows to harness the instinctive nature. Fast periodically, pilgrimage yearly, uphold your vows strictly, be they marriage, monasticism, non-addiction, tithing, loyalty to a lineage, vegetarianism, or non-smoking. Om Namah Shivaya.